First, the Trump administration asked the U.S. Supreme Court late last week to strike down the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, in its entirety. In the court filing, administration officials said that because Congress has done away with the law's individual mandate, the rest of it should be tossed out, too. The latest legal action is part of the White House effort to support a lawsuit led by Texas and 17 other states seeking to overturn the 10-year-old ACA. While arguments in the case aren't expected for months, the impact of a decision to strike down the law would be far-reaching, especially as Americans deal with the health impacts of and financial fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic. Philip Bracco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Always good to be here, Rob.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Supreme Court here. The basic idea that because the tax penalty for not having insurance isn't part of the ACA anymore, that got removed by Congress, the rest of it should be struck down because of past Supreme Court rulings. Can you talk a little more about the court side of this?
Yeah, so this is, I think it's important to set the context here because this is a very unusual move for the executive branch when the constitutionality of duly passed laws comes up. It's usually the case that the executive branch defends those laws. And what we're seeing here is the executive branch actually agreeing with these 17 states and a few individuals that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional and should be struck down in its entirety. The case itself builds on sort of two legs of challenges to the ACA that have come over the years. So on the one hand, you might recall that in 2012, the Supreme Court upheld the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate, that provision of the law that requires you to carry insurance coverage. But it did so because it said the individual mandate was a tax. And so what the administration is arguing is that in 2017, the Republicans in Congress passed a piece of legislation called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And what that piece of legislation did was it zeroed out the penalty in the individual mandate. And so what the administration is claiming is that now, because that penalty is zeroed out, that provision of the law is now no longer a tax. Now, I think it's important to note that that's kind of an odd legal argument because it assumes that when Republicans passed that piece of legislation, zeroing out the penalty, that they knew, in some sense, that the provision was unconstitutional, but it's very, very hard to find evidence that they knew that. The second piece of the case, and I think the far more impactful one for most people, because of course the individual mandate has already been, you know, effectively nullified by Congress by zeroing out the penalty, so most people aren't, you know, experiencing that kind of penalty now. The other piece of the case is that the administration and these 17 states are saying that if the individual mandate is unconstitutional, that the rest of the ACA has to fall. And the really challenging legal aspect of this is that, you know, back in 2015, there was a case called King versus Burwell. One of the sort of features of the case was that the court in its decision sort of made the argument that the individual mandate was sort of tied in some way to the rest of the law. But what Congress did when it zeroed out the penalty in 2017 was it actually chose not to repeal the rest of the law. And in fact, there were a number of other votes in Congress that you can look at in which it was hard for Republicans to even get a bare majority in the Senate for repealing little sections of the law. And so, again, I think one of the tricky legal things here is that the administration is saying that what Congress intended to do in 2017 when it zeroed out the penalty was get rid of the law in its entirety. And that's something that I think legal commentators really from across the political spectrum have observed is one of the oddest features in this case. And when the Supreme Court makes its decision, it will ultimately, that kind of ruling will have impacts that go far beyond the case of the ACA itself. And so the real question that you imagine the court is going to be wrestling with here is, should we read into the legislative process something that the legislative process doesn't really offer us? And so I think it might be the case that we don't see the sort of standard sort of ideological split that we see, the 5-4 kind of split on this case, because the implications of that for a lot of duly passed laws are quite far-reaching.
Talking to Philip Rocco from Marquette University, looking at the Trump administration's filing asking the U.S. Supreme Court to completely rule the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional, ending the whole thing. Philip, that's the legal side of things we've gotten into. Let's talk about the impact. Now, this arguments haven't been heard yet, won't be heard for months, it looks like. But supposing the Supreme Court agreed with the Trump administration and the Texas-led effort here, a lot of people think of the Affordable Care Act as, you know, the marketplace. That's one of the things that would go away. Can you talk about what else would go away if the Supreme Court ruled that way?
Well, when I usually come on Central Time, this is sort of deja vu. We talk about the the millions of people, 27 million people who would lose coverage, or I think it's like 24 million people, excuse me, who would lose coverage, who have already gained it under the ACA. That's people who have gained it from Medicaid, people who have gained it from the individual marketplace as well. But there's a twist now. And the twist is that in addition to those people who have already gained coverage through the ACA, you also have to think about that we're now living through a time where 27 million people have lost jobs by the sort of latest estimates from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Of those, 26.8 are newly uninsured. And of those 26.8, 22.78 are eligible for subsidized coverage through the ACA, either through the individual marketplace or through Medicaid. And so the implications of this decision will reach not only the people who have already received coverage under the Affordable Care Act, but the people for whom the employer-sponsored insurance that they've been able to receive is because of layoffs, something that is no longer available to them. So what we have now is a really lower bound on the size and scale of the population that's increased. And the other thing that I'll say about that is that beyond, so we think about this, when we talk about the ACA or Obamacare, we think mainly about people who are newly insured, but the law does so much more than that. If you think about what we really rely on in the midst of a pandemic to deal with the public health impacts of the pandemic, you would think about things like rural hospitals and community health centers in urban areas. Those are two sets of institutions that the ACA, either through grants in the case of community health centers, or in the case of rural hospitals through Medicaid, the law has really helped to sustain revenue for those sorts of organizations. And so the real question you have to ask yourself is, what might happen if the ACA is repealed in its entirety? What would the implications be for those aspects of the public health infrastructure? And I think what we can say is that they would be weakened substantially in terms of just their ability to keep the lights on.
There's also the pre-existing condition side of the Affordable Care Act, rules against denying coverage or charging considerably more for coverage, I believe, for people with pre-existing conditions. That, as I understand, would go away if the ACA were repealed?
Yes. I mean, you have to think about this. It's hard to, once laws pass, they sort of become like the air we breathe, right? It's hard to remember what the world was like before they passed. And, you know, so this thing we've sort of taken for granted, the idea that, for example, adult children up to the age of 26 can be on their parents' insurance. That will go away. The individual protection for people with pre-existing conditions, barring insurers from denying them care, that will go away as well. So this is really a reset to a status quo that I think by this point few people can even remember. So it is what I'm discussing here is really only the tip of the iceberg.
We're talking to Philip Rocco right now, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, author of the book Obamacare Wars, looking at the White House request that the U.S. Supreme Court strike down the Affordable Care Act. You can join in at 800-642-1017. one, two, three, four. Do you rely on getting insurance through the Affordable Care Act? Has a furlough or job loss lately meant that the ACA is now your way of being insured? What's been good or bad about the experience? Do you think that the Obamacare law, that the Affordable Care Act, should be overturned? What would you like to see replace it? If so, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Angelo on Facebook who said, I rely on the ACA currently. I had great insurance through my employer, but I'm currently furloughed. I can't afford COBRA. Without ACA, I would be uninsured. And Becky also wrote that she lost her job due to COVID-19 and is relying on Obamacare right now. Share your thoughts, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Phil Rocco from Marquette University, author of the book Obamacare Wars. We're looking at the latest legal challenge to the Affordable Care Act. You can join in. 800-642-1234 is the number. What do you think of the Trump administration request for the Supreme Court to strike down the Affordable Care Act? Have you relied on the ACA now or in the past for your health coverage? Are you worried about what happens if it goes away? If you want to see it done away with, tell us what you want to see replace it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Mary Kay is with us in Kenosha. Mary Kay, hello.
Hello. I believe in competition, and I'm happy they're overturning Obamacare. But in place of it, we need the competition right now. So state Badger Care, everybody would pay into it according to their income. If they made hardly any income, they'd have to hardly pay anything. Okay, and then they have to make a law, make it into law that pre-existing conditions would be covered.
Mary Kay, thanks a lot for the call. And again, it's not being overturned yet. It's a Supreme Court challenge. They haven't heard arguments on that yet. But thanks for calling in, Mary Kay. So Mary Kay saying we need more competition into the system, Phil, but seeing a role for Badger Care and wanting to keep those pre-existing conditions coverage requirements in place.
Yeah, I think Mary Kay's positions are, in fact, the idea of wanting to have care available for as many people as possible, and as well to really be able to preserve some of the protections that people with pre-existing conditions have enjoyed under the ACA are actually, quite popular. And it's when you look at approval of the ACA, or sometimes referred to as Obamacare overall, it splits along partisan lines when you talk about it as the entire law. So, something like 70% of Republicans still disapprove, and, a similar percentage or northward of that of Democrats approve of the ACA. So there's some partisan division. But when you look at the actual material provisions, what the law really does, there's sort of massive public approval really across both parties for making it so that people don't have to go into bankruptcy when they incur health care costs, or protecting people who don't have the income to afford health care. Those basic ideas enjoy wide bipartisan support. And so this is actually, I think, one of the interesting aspects about what the Trump administration is doing politically, which is, so when it comes to the sort of material consequences of repealing the ACA, there's not a lot of support for that. Once you look at the actual prospect of the ACA being repealed, public opinion sort of responds in a pretty negative way. What the Trump administration, I think, is banking on here, or what they're hoping for, is that this case isn't going to be heard by the Supreme Court until well into election season. It will not be decided until 2021 after the election. And so I think what they're hoping for here is that the Republican base is going to respond to this move in a sort of symbolic way, thinking about this as, we elected Donald Trump to get rid of Obamacare, to sort of repudiate the political legacy of Barack Obama, and not necessarily to get rid of, all of the sort of material consequences of the law, but to sort of engage in that kind of symbolic activity. That, I think, is the hope for the election. But we are in a sort of different political moment than we were in 2016. When you look at 2016, it's a sort of uh, a,
an election happening after two decades of a Democratic president, sort of increasing division sort of around some of the issues that Donald Trump brings up during that campaign. But now Trump is the incumbent. You're in the midst of a pandemic. Republicans have tried and failed to repeal the ACA several times. And it might be the case that the kind of bump that Trump might enjoy from the base for sort of pressing on with his legal maneuver against the ACA might not be matched with the same sort of response as they might be expecting. It might actually unleash a backlash as well from Democrats and independents who sort of overwhelmingly support the ACA.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Jennifer is with us in Milwaukee. Jennifer, hi.
Hi.
So, what do you want to bring up, Jennifer?
I've been on the Affordable Care Act since the beginning. And for me, it's been a lifesaver because I have a pre-existing condition, and so without it, I wouldn't have insurance. But also, I get assistance to help pay for my deductible as well as my premium. But without that assistance, the way it is now, the deductibles have gone so high that most people can't afford it.
Jennifer,
so they
thanks.
Do need to make some changes.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for the call. And Phil, that is a concern. Some people, clearly, like Jennifer, have benefited, but there are people, especially at certain economic ranges, who really haven't and have a hard time would have a hard time paying for the marketplace if they can't get insurance elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you think about what the ACA really was that it was an attempt to plug some of the most egregious holes that have been left in the American approach to health insurance. But it didn't change some of the underlying dynamics that make this system that we have, this sort of very fragmented system, kind of unsustainable, which is it didn't really harness the growth in prices, which push up the cost for insurers and individuals. It also didn't really deal with the fact that it's not just uninsurance, the fact that people lack insurance. It's the insurance coverage that people have, including insurance through the ACA, still leaves them on the hook for a significant portion, in many cases, of their annual income. And so this is the concept of underinsurance, right? You have an insurance product, you carry an insurance product, but it really doesn't pay the bulk of the costs you incur when you go to the doctor, when you go to the pharmacist's counter. And so, you know, I think one of the interesting things is that when you hear the Trump administration questioned about, you know, what exactly do they want to do after they repeal the Affordable Care Act, what is their replacement, they sort of nod to the fact that most people still experience these sorts of problems, even with the ACA, but, you know, really as the result of this, the fundamental logic of the American health insurance non-system, as it were. But what exactly they would do to reach those goals is unclear. And if the sort of the playbook that Republicans put out for the last few times they attempted to repeal and replace the ACA would hold or would obtain, it isn't clear that those dynamics would be reversed at all. In fact, if you look at the analyses that came out after the first series of attempts to repeal and replace the ACA in 2017, it would seem that it would leave more people uninsured and underinsured, more people effectively paying more and more of their income for insurance, you know, and really leaving people without the kind of support that, again, has sort of broad public approval.
I want to bring on one more caller before we run out of time. Jeff is with us near La Crosse. Jeff, hello.
Hi. Say, the gentleman who was speaking pretty much covered my two points. I was just going to say that, you know, I'm a 60-year-old truck driver and I take cholesterol-lowering medication. And the preventative aspects of the Affordable Care Act make my company health insurance a great insurance. I don't, you know, it encourages me to come in and get blood work regularly at no cost. I have zero copays for my statins, for my cholesterol-lowering medications, which I might not be taking if I had to pay a lot of money out of pocket. The point made that I was going to make as well is that the Republicans and Mr. Trump, he says that we're going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act and we're going to have great health care. But what does that mean? We're going to have great health care once we get rid of it. They should really propose something if they want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Just in our last minute, Phil, that's a point, the preventive care aspect of the Affordable Care Act.
Right. I think that the inclusion, the Affordable Care Act really began to treat essential health benefits, to treat preventative care as an essential health benefit, something that insurers had to cover. And again, I think the point that Jeff makes really well is that once people start thinking about this related to the material sort of consequences of repealing the ACA, the political calculus really does change. I think what the Trump administration is sort of hoping for, if I could trace out their ideal, is they want Trump to win the 2016 election and have the Supreme Court repeal the ACA, setting up some kind of political opportunity structure where Trump can sort of put his seal on the space of health insurance. But it's not really clear that political logic squares with the way that voters are thinking about this. Health is really at the top of the agenda in a number of key races. It's really still squarely at the top in voters' minds. It's not clear that sort of the reality and how voters think about it is how the Trump administration has projected.
Phil, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Always good to be with you, Rob.
That's Philip Rocco, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University and author of the book Obamacare Wars, Federalism, State Politics, and the Affordable Care Act. He talked with us about the Trump administration's request that the U.S. Supreme Court strike down the ACA in its entirety.